Ms. Rivers, would you like to do a roll call, please?
Hello. Dr. Barazene?
Here.
Trustee Clyburn?
Here.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Rudd?
Present.
Dr. Chard?
Here.
Trustee Bell? Trustee Barber?
Here.
Trustee Grassinger? Dr. Musgrove?
Here.
General Schwartz? Trustee Scott? Trustee Shelton?
Here.
Trustee White Richardson?
Here.
President Mason?
Here.
Chief of Staff Guillory?
Here.
Chief Student Development and Success Officer Latham?
Here.
Chief Academic Officer Potter?
Present.
COO Franklin?
Here.
General Counsel Russell?
Here.
Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Ron, would you like to do any introductions?
I don't know who knows who at this point. I can introduce Dr. Guillory.
Exactly.
But I think we already met her before. She's on board and at full steam already. Started when, Monique? August, what was it?
Virtually July 16th, but I've actually been on site since about August 8th.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'd like to say a word or two to the, this is the Student Outcomes Committee. It's not the whole board, but it's most of them.
Right. Yes, I was happy to meet some of you at the ribbon cutting on Saturday, and I've just really been enjoying my time getting to know everyone in Firebird Nation, so I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Welcome. Happy to have you. All right. The next order of business is to ask for a motion for approval for the minutes of the March 15th meeting. Does everyone have a chance to see them?
So moved. That's Tard.
Clyde, or a second.
Is there discussion? I have discussion. Here I am, the one meeting I missed, and then I get to be chair, so it's not fair. No, thank you very much. Do we need to do a roll call?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Well, Ms. Rivers?
Dr. Barazone?
Aye.
Trustee Clyburn?
Aye.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Rudd?
Aye.
Dr. Tard?
Aye.
Madam Chair, the motion carries.
Thank you very much. You have the agenda in front of you, I believe. We sent an amended one along today, and I am very grateful for the time that Dr. Latham has spent with me, helping me understand some of the logic behind some of the things that we do, as well as some of the, hello, Chairman Bell, as well as tolerance for getting some of the appendices here wrong. So I really want to thank him for that, as well as you for your patience. But this first item I asked to have in here, not really a discussion of philanthropy, it's bringing up again an article that Dr. Mason presented to us, about the logic behind the Mackenzie Scott gifts and how data-driven she is, as those who are working for her. And it seems to me that this committee, of all committees, should be able to be interested in reading this article and understanding how very important the public presentation of these materials is. As the saying goes, you never know who's looking. And so I hope, we're not expecting anyone to really discuss this today because the materials came too late to go. But I do hope that at some point, maybe next meeting, we can, because I think it would help rise to a higher level of understanding to use some of the simpler charts that they have in there, particularly figures 5 and 6 in the Rutgers report, where they do a very good longitudinal study of key indicators. And there's been a remarkable amount of work done here just in the time since I've been a board member, collecting data and helping us understand it and analyze it. But I for one, find very helpful sometimes the simplest reduction of some of this data to try to see what's going on in terms of trend lines. So I had asked that we create a third line on these charts that represents UDC's numbers, as opposed to the numbers of those haves and the have-nots who got the grants. But it's a pretty good cross-section of HBCU. So I think we could stand to learn something from that. And I also apologize for having somehow directed or requested that the Eiffel and the Master Scan be sent. No interest in that one. You must have wondered what it was. But it was these two articles that I think are of great interest. And I hope you find them so too. So, one example of questions that it might, make us think about is, you know, who are our peer groups? I mean, who really are our peer institutions? And if there is no one, then how do we get a proxy for that? How do we somehow combine maybe community college data, ours, with that of other institutions and try to come up with averages? Anyway, the drive for simplicity can sometimes be confusing, but I think it would help if we do it for a while. Please, go ahead.
Okay, one of the observations that I would just simply like to make, and I don't know that it's going to make any difference one way or the other, but we have done, I've been on this board a long time, and we have done an awful lot of work, and we have shown growth, we have shown retention, we have shown a number of things where, you know, we are moving up.
Yep.
And, or we did prior to the corona thing, or COVID-19. But, and one of the things that troubles me in all of this is that somehow we are not getting the kind of publicity, I guess, that we need in order for people to see the great advances that we have made at this institution. And I don't know who we talked to. I know that the chairman of the city council, you know, is a strong advocate for us and what we do. But we need more than just the chair. We really need people who have some money, who can help us. So that's all. It's just my observation. I became very annoyed when I looked at this, and I thought, well, hell, I mean, we've done an awful lot, and they've not looked at us, they've not talked about the advances that we have made, and a lot of great stuff. So that's it, and I'll be quiet.
Anyone else have observations? If you had a chance to look at these, I know the president sent the longer one about Rutgers out earlier, and maybe, I don't know, Mr. Mason, did you get comments on that when you sent it out?
I did not, but I could make a comment or two if you'd like me to.
Please.
Well, first, Mary Beth, who runs that center at Rutgers, we've known her for a long time, and she did a good job, I think, showing both the data-driven decision, but some of it wasn't all data. Some of it was just sort of reputation. Like, for example, if you looked at Prairie View, you know, Prairie View got it because Ruth Simmons is the president, and she used to be the president of Brown, right? So there's a lot of that going on as well.
Oh, perfect.
But based on the data, But Dr. Tartt is right. We have made a lot of progress, but it's progress compared to where we started. And so based on the data, we really didn't stack up with the institutions that got the big bumps. And it's not any fault of ours. It's just, it's just timing. They are where they are, and we are where we are. But if he comes around again in another 5 years, we'll be in that next group. And so I understood what happened. You know, I'm not Ruth Simmons, and I apologize for that. I wish it was. But based on the data, based on the decisions that were made just based on the data, I don't think we were in that group.
No, I think that's true. We've been dealt a rough hand by the board, the Oversight Board, and various other ways. But I do think it's important for us to lay our data down alongside this other data and get a very square understanding of it. I mean, one of the problems, as you've pointed out, is having to average the community college retention and completion numbers with the flagship. But maybe there's a way for us to think about that and get some better numbers in addition to the improvement numbers and have a communications plan around that. In any case, if you're willing, I think it would be very interesting to ask Ms. Bird and Dr. Latham if you could stand going at it with us for a little while.
I think that's a good
point. Yeah. And, Madam Chair, this is Mignon Clyburn. When I looked over the information sent, I thought about us, and I know we will do this, to track to see how many others are influenced by her example. I think that was what caught my eye, because if others use her template, then we've got a lot of, a lot of things to consider going forward, particularly in how we either decouple, ensuring that, looking at the community college, which might have a different dynamic than the standard 4+ year side of our house. But I'm just wondering if people are going to follow her lead and her template. That would be very telling for me, and I think we'll know that. I think we'll know that quickly. She is an influencer.
I think our data, as I came to understand it, has been influenced very much by analyzing current problems and moving to future solutions. But that data is very long-term. And so it may be that we want to spend a little time taking a look at that. And also, as we were suggesting, disaggregating. I did a little research this afternoon and found, HBCU community colleges, and we should be looking at some of those and break out our data and do comparisons that way if we want to. But anyway, yes, Mr. Shelton.
Oh, Shelton. One of the things that I thought we were trying to do was to create a model that is unique and different, and to make it more accessible for our citizens to get into college and through college, at every stage of the process. And what we were, I believe, creating was a new kind of state university, which was all one system. And though we are not all together as one complete pre-K through university system, we're in the process of creating that model. And I think that was the direction that we were starting in, to maintain both the community college and the university with limited funds. And that was the initial trigger, was that one of us would have had to die to keep both of us together. So we had to create a model that allowed us to have both. And though the others are assessing us by the university standard, I believe it's our responsibility to support ourselves by saying how unique and what our uniqueness standard is. And I don't know who else is compared to our unique state system of higher education. meaning that it's all in one system and all one unit. We're in the process of pulling the whole process together. We have a university and a high school pre-K through 12 system, and we're in the process of uniting them for one small state. I know we're not a state yet, but that's what we're essentially doing. And that mission was to make sure that our citizens at any point could enter into a university setting of some kind, college and university setting, to get the best education their hometown, their city, their state could give them. And the university is trying its best to do that. You all received, for the first time in our history, we're talking about, well, not the first time in our history, but basically the first time in a long time, making sure we have information in every high school. We didn't have to. You do that before because we had faculty in every high school. But now we have to go back and build our relationship just like any state institution would. So that's what I thought we were trying to create, was a model that served every level of this city, from undergraduate to graduate, from pre-K through college, university.
President Mason, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, all of that is true. I think that we are unique. There weren't any community colleges on that list that I know of, and that's because any HBCU community college. Because
yes,
they're open enrollment institutions, and technically, from IPAD's point of view, we are an open enrollment university. And so we're not going to win. I would say we're not going to win that U.S. News and World Report listing, but the truth is we actually ranked higher than Prairie View on that list, right? For the first time ever, we were on the list. And so it was a few things. I've talked to people like Jim Shelton, you know, who's over there with Blue Meridian. We talked to Mary Beth. And, you know, there was some science to it, but it wasn't all science. It had a lot to do with the Morehouse connection, if you looked at it.
Gotcha.
You know, some of the schools were just boutique. So I wouldn't, I think we are special. I think we are unique. And I think that we will start to separate ourselves from the pack, not by getting to the top of the U.S. News and World Report list, although I think we'll climb up that list, but because we're just different. And the things that we do as one state institution all under one umbrella in a way that I think is going to, I really do think is going to provide a model for the rest of the country. But having said that, Dr. Barazone, I think your idea is a good one. I think we can start to work the data so that it helps to tell our unique story better, which I think is your point.
It's part of my point, and I guess I've never seen an institution that didn't think it was special and unique, so forgive me for that, even though I understand the way in which we're creating something that is not the same structurally anywhere. I understand that. But data is the name of the game, and our accreditors want it, and it just felt to me that this was easily accessible data that we could dismiss for all the reasons you correctly point out, the fame of one president, et cetera. But we might really learn some things if we laid our data out on a similar template about ourselves, at least longitudinally, and also if we disaggregated a community college from the four-year program just to see what it looks like, because there are HBCU two-year colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be great to be way outperforming them?
Yeah, we have it. We can just pull it out that way.
Exactly. And I understand the way we've collected data is for problem solving. But anyway, I don't want to take this any further. Would you like to say something? Yes, please.
Oh, yes. Just looking over the report, I went to Hampton University. And just kind of piggybacking off, first of all, my name is Trustee Barber. But just piggybacking off of Trustee Shelton and President Mason, one of the things that I wish I went to UDC instead of going to Hampton University. Hampton University's tuition is $30,000 out of pocket. I had a scholarship, But I, overall, my main point is that the culture here is something that's so unique because it's in the city. And the only reason why I didn't go to UDC previously over Hampton is like the recognizable name. I didn't know about UDC until I had financial issues, and it's kind of the school you go to. Oh, you could go here, and it's, you know, cheap, and you can afford it, you know, fast food coverage. When in actuality, our business department is far, I want to say, greater and more helpful than any other business. I've been in business school at community college level, and I went to Hampton. I was in their five-year MBA program. And it's just one thing that I'm tackling. It's like, yes, numbers matter, but how do we assess these numbers to really make UDC shine for what it's best known for? And I think we can't really do a comparison between these other universities because we're not like them. The research that I'm going to look into is like, how do I take the numbers of UDC and the accomplishments that we have done and really showcase what we're strong at? Because we're not strong where HU is strong. They have the largest endowment out of all HBCUs. You know, you have people come over there and like in Louis Vuitton and BMWs. That's not what UDC is like pride like ourselves on. So it's just looking at what's unique to us and kind of going with strong. And so that's kind of research I'm going to do on my own to the next committee meeting, because I didn't even know that my great aunt, my grandmother graduated from this university or taught here. And that's an issue. Why isn't our alum really speaking about it, really engaging? Like, how do we really become that center hub like we used to be in the past? So that's just something that I noticed. I'm sorry if I overstepped.
No, thank you.
But I'm going to make a bet. Our data is going to look better than you think when we disaggregate.
Yeah, we agree.
Yeah. I just wanted, this is Trustee Bell. I just wanted to touch in on Trustee Barber's point because I think it's an excellent point. I think we don't stress enough the touch that UDC has on its students and our ability to impact their lives directly. And Dr. Potter did an excellent presentation. I think it was one of his report outs where he had two or three students that spoke specifically, and we asked them about their experience, and they talked about unique and the personal touches and how they impacted their matriculation through the university, whether professors, faculty, staff, and how others, they had the choice to go to other HBCUs. There was one young lady from Texas, I think, that was from Prairie View and that had decided to switch. And the touches that were at UDC is what she attributed her success to in terms of making it. She was, I think she had gone through the associate's program and was now going to be rolling in the four-year program as well, to the articulated pathway to the four-year program. So that touch and our ability to connect with students to impact success for them is something that I think we should also stress as we aggregate this data and really compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges when it comes to how we rank with other institutions.
Right. Okay, thank you. If there's no one else who wants to speak about this, and you're welcome to, Dr. Mason.
One thing, I want to tell Trustee Barber, this is President Mason. Bless your heart. I'm going to call President Harvey at Hampton. And let him know what you're thinking, okay? But thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're 100% agreement of that, needing to communicate our story even better. This is a lot of progress. Thank you. I believe we're now at, and help me out here, Dr. Layton. Would you like to go to Ms. Bird at this point?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I just want to also say to Trustee Barber, just you're going to be invited to participate with us in this whole transfer initiative that we're going to talk about in a few minutes, right? And so you're now duly appointed to the committee to help us do that process, because I think your experience speaks to that and speaks to what we do well at UDC, which is a part of what this initiative is about, is how do we take that and not only from a data standpoint, but from a qualitative standpoint, expand it together, put it together into collective messaging, but also how do we deal with some internal processes that make that transition smoother for students like yourself. So you get that high.
That's right, and we may need to collect more qualitative data, so it might be important. Okay, thank you very much. Good conversation. Ms. Bird, would you like to pick up through all of your things?
Yes, thank you, Trustee Barboni. Ms. Rivers, if you could please share, I guess we'll go with the template. Dr. Layton, did you want to do the template first, or you want to do the other chart first? Maybe the chart first, because
the chart
first lead into your piece.
Yeah.
So we can do chart first, Ms. Rivers, please, and then the template.
Transfer and retention one? Which one?
The one that has graduation, I believe. It has graduation, retention.
Right.
Yes.
Table A and B.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Rivers. So we're just going to kind of going to, hopefully, Trustee Gravoni, this is a little bit simpler format that we're trying to kind of get through as far as just being able to provide some data and look at over the years. So you can see, you know, kind of our enrollment.
Can I make a request?
Yes.
Can we enlarge that?
Okay.
I'm sorry, even with my glasses, I couldn't see it.
Right now?
Well, that's good. That's better. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Okay, great. So our enrollment, as we can look from 2011, and we're going to fall 2020, obviously what the next meeting will be able to have fall 21 data points. But we can kind of just see how our numbers have gone over the last few years. And we know that for, you know, fall 20 is dealing with COVID. And some of the issues we've dealt with there. We can also see our WDLL counts here over the last 10 years as well, our workforce development students. And you can see them disaggregated, obviously, between undergraduate, graduate law, community college students as well. So if there's, you know, any questions on that, I'd be happy to answer. But I'm just going to kind of go through the tabs briefly just so we can kind of see kind of where we've been over the last 10 years or 9 years. We tend to come answer them.
Yeah, and so, Maria, this is headcount, right?
Headcount, correct.
Yeah. Oh, that's important.
So, and that's a good point. Thank you, Dr. Mason, President Mason, for asking that, because we know that we're a lot closer when we look at the FTEs. There's been a huge switch of our students. So in 2011, we had far more part-time students than we do today, obviously now, especially in fall 2020. So in some years, you'll see maybe a 4,600 number of headcount, but actually from an FTE perspective, we're a little bit ahead of where we were in previous years.
Do we keep that comparative chart anywhere?
We can use FTEs if you all would prefer to see FTEs in the, and then, you know, we could do that for the next meeting. That would be very easy to
add. That might be interesting because the biggest budget impact is the FTE.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. And transfer tab. You can go to, thank you. So as we can see here, our transfer student population, which is, I think, where we're going to spend a lot of time this evening on, and we're going to enlarge the chart, so I'll wait till it's enlarged. We can see from 18 to 20 the number of transfer students, and then we can also see for the fall of 20 some of the major schools that the students came from for our transfer population of students as well. And so obviously Prince George's Community College, Montgomery College are typically our larger ones. The PG had a much larger component last year in the fall of 20.
Maria, you know, I don't like to surprise you with questions, but let me just ask.
Uh-huh.
Does the fact that we used to count community college, our community college students as transfers a few years ago, and then now we don't count them as transfers, we count them as transition, or is that in these numbers somewhere? Or do we know?
So in the fall of 18, we did have some CC. What I would say is that there could be potentially some CC students there. The majority of the CC students were looked at not as including this transfer number in the 324, but we did obviously streamline, and so I would not be surprised if you saw a few, potentially some that went and came back to the university. So, but I know for fall of 20, 100% students that have never been in UDC that are coming in the door.
Good, thank you.
You're welcome. The third tab there, I can barely see a retention rate, I think. Okay, if we can make that a little bit larger, thank you. So for the fall of 19, you can see we've obviously greatly improved our retention rate for our first-year students.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that has, obviously, that will lend to our graduation rates improvement as well. And that goes across the board, even for our associate's degree program.
Super.
Okay. We can go to graduation next. Thank you.
How are we doing that? What do we attribute that to?
For retention?
Yeah.
I'll let Dr. Latham speak to that, but from my understanding, it's dealing with those initiatives that we've been working on for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Actually, last 4.5 years. So, yeah. Trustee yeah. Bell, when we got here in 2016, we were determined to put together a student success model that reflected the change to the division of student development success, right, from student affairs, with a real keen eye on persistence and retention. That was the charge when Ron brought me here, like, hey, let's get this particular model developed. And we've been able to do that with a particular focus on how we approach advising, how we approach the co-curricular experience, like student development, and then how we even now link in enrollment as a full circle approach to what we see as a student success model for UDC currently. And that's been shown in other reports we provide. If you talk about the student success model overall, first-year experience, orientation, advising, more junior year, how we transition to the faculty advising process as well, and the redevelopment of talent at both campuses also. So we're hiring new people at both campuses, particularly in the advising cluster, to help change and support the new model that we've been developing. But that's how it's been done over the last 4 years.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Latham. And the graduation rate, we can see that has also, this is 6-year graduation rate, so this is based off of the IPEP graduation rate. And I know, Trustee Garzoni, you had asked about disaggregating this data, and I'm going to tell you that for our associate's degree program, we're at about 8% graduation associate's degree, and then for our 6-year bachelor's degree, it's about 42%.
Wow.
Okay. So that's kind of where we are. So we'll add that number to this so you all can find it.
Thank you. I think it really helps for people to understand that.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, if you separate them out, both of those are not that bad for a community college and for a 4-year HBCU. But that's not the way iPad tracks it. So.
Correct.
Well, and publicity could.
You're right. No, you're right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'll just add to that point, President Mason, that you also on IPEP has a transfer out rate. And in the associate's degree, there's a great number of transfer out, which means they've come in and they've taken those credits and gone somewhere else. And so that's one point, you know, that's where you would have a little bit of a lower graduation rate as well, because it's a much larger transfer out rate in that area.
Right. And let me just, again, just to give you the whole picture while we're going through it. Remember, the community college was set up as a technical school, and so a lot of those degrees were not intended to move on to bachelor's level right. programs.
That's right.
And so we're just now starting to articulate our own community college programs into our bachelor programs, which should increase both graduation rates over time.
Thank you, President Mason. And I think the last one says, to click on that completion. Thank you. And so the completion count, if this is just looking at the number of students that complete. We know that, and the studies have shown in the work that Dr. Latham has done, and obviously I've worked with him on with EAB, has shown us that our transfer students are our greatest population of students that actually complete. And so we can see here that if you look at our completion rate compared to our graduation rate, we obviously fare much better in completers because we can't obviously count those transfer students in our graduation rate.
I'm sorry, but I don't completely understand really what you mean, completer versus graduation.
So a completer is someone that came in the door as a junior. Let's say, for example, they came in and they had they ranked the status of a junior at the university, and they graduated from UDC. They received a UDC degree. They would be considered a completer. A graduate is someone that came in the door as a freshman, never been to college before, first time in college student, and completed a degree at UDC, and they would be a part of our graduation rate.
So community college, oh, so that's right, because IPEDS does only new first year, first time.
Correct.
Okay. Right.
Yes. Okay. And that's those are our completion counts. And so you can see we've been growing in that area as well.
Are those percentages?
No, this is pure numbers. So this is just the number of students that actually complete. And that's because, you know, it's difficult to really look at a completion rate from a pure perspective because you're including your transfer students in that number as well.
So the only percentage you could get is the number of seniors that you have at a given year and what percentage of those seniors actually receive a degree from the university.
Thank you.
So, Maria, I'm sorry if you explained this. This is Trustee Bell. How do we talk about our completers then when we talk about ourselves as an institution? Because given our student enrollment, our completers is a very critical part, and we deserve credit for that. So IPED may not think so, but that is something that we do, that we bring value, and it's the moms and dads that have credits from other places that are coming here after some time and completing their school, what have you. So I'm sorry if I missed it, but how do we publicize that or talk about that?
So we provide that, like, in our, you know, in any of our data reports, we have completer numbers, but that would be, you know, something I know Dr. Latham deals with on the marketing end, student outcome. So obviously it's a student outcome number, but it's going to be about, you know, really how do we.
Yeah, how we package it up, Trustee Bell. So that's part of why we looked at the transfer student initiative here for the focus for this year, is because that will allow us to put together the packaging and the processing into a collective narrative and a story to tell about this group of students, right, that specifically transfer, that are part of this computer number, that adds to the UDC experience, adds to our success story, adds to a successful student success metric that needs to be told. So that's one of the reasons we look at that, because that gives us packaging, the data, from qualitative and quantitative, that allows us to paint that into a narrative. So I mentioned that when I met with the VP, a new VP of marketing this week, right, to talk about this initiative and share the story with her about why we're doing the transfer initiative within the student outcomes committee this year. It's to help provide that so it can be packaged and told, because that's the next step for us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Could I ask, I mentioned earlier trying to find a cipher for comparison to these other institutions. Could completers be added to graduates, undergraduate graduates, just to get rough numbers compared to enrollments at any point? You don't have to answer it now, but it occurs to me it could be a working number for us.
And we can look into the other institutions' completer numbers as well.
Yeah.
Be good.
Please know that's been the history of the school.
Yeah.
We are the completer institution for citizens of the District of Columbia. We have never marketed that. But if you look through all of our classes, every generation, you'll see the kids that went off to the other schools and then came back to finish at DC Teachers, UDC, Federal City, the whole nine yards. We've been doing that since before I came to.
Right.
You know, but we've never been getting credit for it. Because we were getting credit in our school system because they became good teachers in our school district.
This is Trustee Blood. Trustee Shelton, you're absolutely correct. And this is a major part of our success, and we've got to figure out how to capture that.
Exactly.
And include within the data, but also that's a part of our success, the story that we need to tell.
That is exactly right. IPEDS has not been a friend to us. We have been talking about this for years, trying to get IPEDS to begin to change some of those hard-nosed requirements that they put. We do, and that's the point that I've been trying to make, we do an awful lot at this institution, and we are improving, you know, the community, not just our graduates, but we're reaching out to the community that we serve. And it seems to me that we ought to get some credit. And we ought to have people who are standing there and singing that song constantly until somebody listens to it.
Mm-hmm. And Mackenzie needs to know about that.
Sorry?
This is Trustee Bell, but Mackenzie Scott needs to know about that.
Exactly.
Because what she gets is IPEDS data, you know, and what she needs to know is that there's another story to be told, and the success that we're having, something that we're doing well at, that if we could get the right funding dollars to help us support that, we're making a direct, transformative impact. And I know that Nathan and others know that, but that's what we have to keep getting out.
Trustee Scott, can I make a comment?
Yes, of course.
Yes, I just want to say as well, and this has been an ongoing scenario, but I know we do have a new market marketing director that just came on board, and this might be a great opportunity for us to look at some ways, especially from our media department, in terms of doing our own YouTube, developing our own stories, and telling what it is that we really want to put out there, opposed to someone else painting our story in a different way. So this could be a great opportunity for us to, you know, start putting together our media department, start putting our own YouTubes out, push it out into the community, and maybe we'll get a better scenario or a better leverage in getting some monies pushed towards our way.
Okay, thank you very much. If there's not more on this, I think I move to the next chart.
Excuse me?
Ms. Byrd, do you have some more?
Sorry. Trustee, go ahead. Yeah, no, it's okay. One thing that I believe Trustee Shelton had said, and my grandma actually she's a teacher, and she graduated from Washington Teachers College, but she was a completer, and I just recognized I'm a completer. So while looking at the data, I was like, okay, how do I factor in? Because the majority of students that I interact with in my department are parents. They are coming back from, like, these big gaps of university, like, from being in any four-year institution, and just understanding that they should be represented not only, like, in the university, but also in the marketing, because that's who we cater to. And so, like everybody said, iPads, and I think earlier, if the system isn't set to really represent us how we shine, then we should kind of create something that shows how we shine and, like, have that data set. We may not, you know, be the best right here, but that's not because that's our playing field, you know. So that's just something I thought about, and it was really interesting that the dots didn't connect until you see the data. And so it was like, wow, this makes us look like we're trash, but we're not, though.
Yeah, I'm starting to see a I'm a completer campaign on the horizon.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. My only last comment about this is all institutions are subject to iPads, and it hurts a lot of community colleges as well, because they just can't keep track of people. So their numbers are much, much lower, and they don't get credit for their students going on and becoming completers at four-year institutions. So it's a hard one, but I don't think we can shun the data. We have to get it and interpret it with all this qualitative, wonderful qualitative data that's coming out here. So this is great. Thank you. Ms. Byrd, you are back.
Yes. And we just have the last data point with the template, the transfer template. We're going to share that as well. Thank you, Ms. Rivers. And so as we were talking about transfer students going and completers, and it's going to lead directly into Dr. Latham's presentation, is, you know, our transfer population, we're going to look at it by cohort. And, you know, obviously fall of 20 is a very hard cohort to look at to compare where we're going. But if we look at our transfer students, we typically have a pretty solid size of transfer students, even when you look at it compared to our first time in college students. And then when you look at their retention rates, you see we're above 70. I mean, last year we were at 80% for our retention rate for our transfer students as well. So they typically fare pretty well at the institution. And if we can just go over to our persistence rate, I mean, our persistence rate was 84%, which would be our second to third year for those students as well. So they fare out pretty well at the institution. And Mr. Rivers, you can scroll over just a little bit more for me, please. Thank you. And then you can see here for our transfer students, our third-year persistence rate is at 83%. So, you know, they come in, I think, pretty ready to know what they want to do, and they pretty much stick throughout. And so that, I think, just further supports some of the points that have been made about our transfer students. And these are our full-time transfer students. Our next slide is our part-time transfer students. And these are at the flagship. and our part-time students, you know, a sizable amount, not as large, obviously, as our full-time transfer students, but for part-time students, their retention rates are still much stronger. You can even see that most recently we're at 81% for fall to spring and 68% for fall to fall retention rate for our transfer students. Let me just roll over a little bit more, Ms. Rivers, please. Thank you. Should have, okay, and then we'll go to the next tab there, Ms. Rivers. Full-time students at the CC. These are our transfer students for the CC. And again, our transfer students be pretty consistent. In 18, we had a large number, larger number than we traditionally do of transfer students into the CC. But even, you know, as you know, sometimes our community college students have a little bit more because they're still trying to decide what they want to do, but we're still seeing a pretty strong retention rate for our CC students as well. Scroll over a little bit. Okay, and then our completion rate for those students for the associates is at 15% and 19%. And we know that that our graduation rate for our AA is around 8%. So we obviously are completing at a higher rate for our transfer students. And the next tab, please. Our part-time students at the CC. That come in, we had a very large number in 19, and so the interesting to see what's going to happen for 21, because we should probably see something very similar to that in 22, definitely in 20, in 21, definitely by 22. And you can see their retention rates, again, are pretty strong, and especially for those students with the AA program. Scroll over just a little bit. And if you can see, if we look at their completion of associates, it's around 6%. What I'll have to do is, I'm sorry, something seems like I'm echoing. Can everyone hear me? Okay. I'll have to look to see what our graduation rate is for our part-time CC students. But again, this is, I'm sorry, Ms. Rivers, you can scroll back over. I think this begins in 4 years ago. And so this begins in 15. And so, we would need to, I'll just look to see if, how many of our CC part-time students, because it might be 6 years or 7 years, a little bit longer time frame for the part-time CC students. If you can just do the last tab for me, please. Ms. River, thank you. And then this is just our goals template. This is kind of a summary of what's happening with this group. And as we said, their retention rates are pretty strong, fall to spring and fall to fall. And if we could just scroll down a little bit, please. And then if you look at the bachelor's completion rate at 200%, it's, which would be double what it takes for 8 years, it's at 28% for our transfer population, for that specific cohort of students. And then for our associate's degree, it's 19%, at their completion rate. And I would less focus on the bachelor's degree completion rate. We can look at the 6 year rate and the 4 year rate, because I think we probably see a little bit better numbers in 4 and 6 year rates as well. And so we can look at those and we can add that to this line, because I think that would probably be closer to what we see with our bachelor's degree seeking graduation rate. But we know that retention typically leads to graduation. And our retention rates for these cohorts are very strong. Thank you, Ms. Burr.
If I could ask a question.
Yes.
So how many, if a student comes into the community college and intends to take enough credits to earn, to move on to the bachelor's degree program, right? But they don't identify themselves as a bachelor's degree candidate, then they count as not having graduated in 3 years? Do you understand the question?
So
we had talked about earlier on, William, about whether students are identifying correctly when they walk in the door. Is that something we dealt with?
So you're exactly correct, President Mason. So if a student, so for example, if you come in the door as an AA, as a CC, you're automatically put in the AA count when we do I-10s. Now, if we find after 2 years you actually are a bachelor's degree graduate, we then have to readjust the cohort.
Okay, so that it does adjust the data accordingly. Gotcha.
Yeah, we would readjust the data accordingly. Correct.
Okay.
Any more questions?
Yeah, this is Trustee Scott. I was just interested in whether we still are carrying the data on the UPS program students that came in originally with us, and how they're faring out as well.
We do have DC UP data. I don't think Dr. Latham. I don't know which meeting, but we could definitely provide DC UP data at a...
Yeah, certainly. We have done that in the past. Trustee Scott, we can certainly do that again for the next meeting. Now, the problem is traditionally have done pretty well over the last 4 years. The retention rate has been around in the 60s, lower 60s, overall mid-60s. There are roughly 78 freshmen coming in this year in the DC UP program, 240 in the total program right now. We have a DC UP coach that's assigned full-time, Dr. Dale Hilton, to that group, and he had a welcome week last week that went extremely well. So we've created a learning community for DCF to help support them as they matriculate through university, particularly during their first year. So it's been extremely successful, as you can imagine, for creating community for that scholarship group. So, but we can certainly provide a data for you. It's not a problem.
Okay, any further
Trustee Barber, I know that for the community college, we also offer a non-degree, like seeking like certification. Is that data like shown or represented at all anywhere?
Trustee Maria Bird, Trustee Barber, yes, that data was represented on the first chart under WDLL. So when you see WDLL completers, that's the workforce development certificate
program. Okay, thank you.
Any other comments, observations, questions? Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Bird.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Dr. Latham.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Maria, for obviously going through the data. If Renika pull up the PowerPoint deck for us, we can have a conversation around this deck. Again, just to give further context to the committee, when we worked with EAD over the last 4.5 years, obviously for the platform that we have through them for Navigate, that helps with the advising platform that ties into all the advising for all campuses. But the greater piece for us is that we did a cluster analysis work with them roughly 18, 20 months ago that really helped us understand the cohorts of students that attend the university and how we could approach servicing them, supplying them with the student success metrics and wraparound services that help them to persist at graduation. The first cohort of that look was really the stopout group from last year. You know, that was the focus for this particular committee last year, and we focused on those 150 students, and we expect 45 or 46 of them actually to return. We had 25 return in the spring, 21 are scheduled to return once we complete registration this week, this fall. So feel good about that number, 46, for the stopout group, and we'll continue to report out on that group as that part of that initiative continues through the portal we created, as well as through the wraparound services through the person in admissions who handles that particular cohort and the services we put around them through advising as well, right, as a wraparound process. So the next part of that was looking at this year. How can we determine what we want to focus on as a student outcome agenda for this coming year? And the next cousin to stop out is really transfer. And not only that, but it's also what Cheyenne Barber spoke to earlier about the UDC experience. We talked to students, and we actually did a focus group of students this past week. And had some good conversation with transfer students about what brought you here, what did you see that we can do better at process-wise, policy-wise, even wraparound services. And we're going to continue to have those as we go through this process. But we know that this is a growing market for the university. We know that we have a strong academic record for these students coming into the university and completing. as Cheyenne has just attested to with her kind of experience coming from Hampton. We do provide good services for these students in terms of the support, the high touch they need, but we can do a better job even at that as well to help recruit, help support, and to help them complete. So that's the focus for this year. That's what led us to this particular conversation I had with Trustee Barragoni a month or so ago about what our vision was for this coming year. She signed off on that, I think, as a strong indication of what we can do with supporting this particular transfer cohort population. You've seen from the data that Maria just presented, they have done well over the past 3 or 4 years at the university, and we think we can even do better in terms of the retention and persistence numbers, but also the experience, student experience, or the qualitative side is going to be expressed through this conversation and this initiative as well, not just that point of how we help them with specific student outcomes or student outcome metrics. So that's what this is about. So that's why you see planning, enrollment, acclimation, engagement, and completion. It's kind of that process of what we're looking at with this deck and how we approach this initiative overall. So I just want to give that framing for the committee so you can have that context. And we can go on now, and if you can go to the next slide, we get started the conversation this evening. Here, just looking at 4 reasons students transfer, just a common base foundational data point I just wanted to provide to help you understand what student transfer students are looking at, right? Attended a 2-year school, want to continue to a 4-year school, obviously the base constant there. Changing majors, another school has a better program for that major. Tuition or living expenses are too high at their current institution, right? They want to transfer, or they have academic trouble at the other institution they want to transfer. Attended a school that wasn't the best fit for them culturally, socially, right, from an engagement standpoint, or from a financial standpoint. As Cheyenne mentioned about just the tuition difference between UDC and Hampton, but also the fact that she feels a community around her here that may be a little bit different than what Hampton has experienced and what has Hampton provided for her. Also, a very good, strong storytelling point for UDC. So, again, this gives you this baseline process here for what we're going to do and how we're going to continue to look at transfers, which we talked to them about when we did our focus group a couple of weeks ago. Next slide, Panika. Thank you. So looking at the fall 2020 data points for the student profile of transfer students, 173 came in. Average credits around 30 for the students who transferred to the university. The number of schools attended, which is also important to see, that as we continue to build a brand and tell the story, we will become a choice for a university, a first choice for students, but we also will always have a transfer component to our narrative and our cohorts as well. And they typically have come from 2 or 3 different schools before they arrive at UDC. So again, it gives us an idea about the support they need, the financial aid packaging they may need, the financial aid support they need as a whole, and then also some of the challenges and opportunities they bring to the table as well in terms of how we make sure that they understand and that we have wraparound services to help them support themselves differently. They are more mature. They have some different experiences. How can we blend that into the overall FTIC experience even to allow that culture to permeate throughout the university and make sure we build community with them as well? So again, you can see how many come from DCPS graduates there, 35%. And then where they land at the university, 44% land at the CC. We're going to find out more about why. We think, obviously, from the initial conversation, it's really about cost structure at the CC, as we already know collectively. And then what that means for them coming in from a GPA standpoint academically. If they had challenges, obviously, at the previous institution or institutions, going to the CC, it gives them an opportunity to do that and still be able to maintain their matriculation. And then where they land in terms of you see top 5 majors. So the associate programs there, the bachelor programs in terms of top 5 majors for transfer students, we're going to peel back that and see how we can better recruit. Are we giving time to those particular programs from a recruitment standpoint? Are we going to really sit down and really have that conversation with the departments to understand the latest offerings, the latest programmatic offerings, curriculum updates? We can push that out from an enrollment services standpoint to being a recruitment edge and a recruitment dynamic for transfer students. So that's how we're going to approach the majors and have a look at those top 5 majors as a whole. But I'll stop here and ask and see if there are any questions before I go on any further with the conversation for the trustees.
Are there questions, comments?
Again, I'm not going to cover the same data slides that Maria covered, so we're going to jump a little bit within the deck itself because she obviously covered those slides just a little while ago specifically. But let's go to the next slide, Renika. This is interesting, too. This is students who transferred to another institution, then transferred back to UDC, right? They started at UDC, then transferred, and then came back. So this is another cohort from a qualitative standpoint I want to have a conversation with as well. to see what that particular rationale was for leaving, and then what the rationale is for coming back. Helps us understand who and what they need, but also helps us understand what type of challenge they may have had coming in that we may have been able to support better, and how we can build that type of wraparound process for them, whether that be financial aid, of course, whether that be counseling, whether that be any other services they may have needed, like academic support, whether the case may be the cause of the transfer, and then we'll obviously find out when they came back. So it was roughly 14 students in the fall 20 class. And you can see the MAGIE program of study there aligned pretty decently with what we just saw in the previous group of students who come in as transfer students initially. Next slide. Here are the top feeder schools for the CC transfer students, and typically we've been familiar with these schools in the past. What we're doing now in terms of this data is looking at the articulation agreement for these schools, understand what and how they can come through this process of better understanding what we offer at UDC in the articulation agreement, make sure it's up to date, make sure it reflects the departments that can be beneficial to those two-year feeder pathways. So we're going to sit down with those and just see, you know, that Montgomery College has one. We have an articulation agreement with them. With NOVA, we don't have one that right now, of course, with PG, so we're going to go through that process of establishing that. But having a holistic partnership with academic affairs to really sit down and walk through this process together so we can understand how these programs align, and then make sure our recruitment teams focus on that, and we have transfer days at those particular schools, and focus on that process and making sure they articulate up to us in terms of the feeder that we normally have had success with in the past. Next slide, please. And that's just the same thing for the bachelor's program. Then you can see there's similar colleges there, Montgomery College, Prince George's College, NOVA, is typical feeders for us to the bachelor's program also. Next slide, Panika, thank you. So this is very interesting too. This is, yes, there we go, thank you. The financial snapshot of the students, right? So we know that the average Pell eligibility use is roughly almost 200%. So 100% for one academic year. So you see 1.73 is roughly 200%, almost 200% for 2 years. So it makes sense because they come in with roughly, you know, 28.5, 28.8 credits. So they come in basically with 2 years worth of work into the institution. So that's what the 1.73 in Pell eligibility use represents. 100% again for 1 year of Pell eligibility, up to 600% for 6 years. The big piece is the loan indebtedness. They come in at 19,000. Almost 20,000. And so average student indebtedness at UDC is roughly 27, 28. So you can see they've taken out a lot of loans to be able to get to where they are at UDC. And so the question is now, how can we support them either through scholarships? How can we support them, helping them understand what they may qualify for from the standpoint of an amnesty program or amnesty-type program for these students, and then payment programs. How do we make sure they understand the payment plan process of UDC, which we started to hear from the focus group is kind of what they land at. How do they get into these payment plans? They certainly are interested in them, how they can get the aid taken care of quickly and make use of that and have a keen understanding of that. So it leads back to us developing workshops for them, specifically for transfer students, through the financial aid process. It helps them understand what aid they have left, what aid is available for them to be able to utilize efficiently over the next 2 years, 2 to 3 years. What scholarships? Can we create a scholarship through the foundation at UDC to help us support this transfer group specifically? And the conversation with Roger Trapp and the board there and the president. So those are things that we're looking at to help our students understand this particular area of financial aid better, have a more intrusive process for that, and then give them a real plan of action, an individual kind of customized plan of action for their financial aid process.
So, William, can I ask a question?
Yep.
You said our average student indebtedness is 28,000.
Yes.
That would include this 19,000, wouldn't it? I mean, that's all students on an average.
Correct.
And so the higher numbers coming in with these students transferring in, I guess my point is the students that start here end up with a lot less debt than the students that come here after they transfer in.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
That might be something else we could sell.
Absolutely. Certainly something they said too when we did the focus group last week is that cost, the affordability of UDC is a part of what they looked at, as well as some of the things they heard about what Trustee Barber mentioned, the culture, the small class sizes, the ability to connect to their professors and have a sense of community earlier in that process, something they sometimes lack in the school they left to come here from. So Absolutely. We're going to skip over, Renika, to the stripping transfer students and recruitment slide. Next slide. There we go. So as we look at this from the standpoint of student development and success learning and what that means for recruitment and enrollment, so, you know, you can see on average transfers account for 16% of UDC applications. And we know we can grow that pool, you know, through articulation agreement improvement and articulation agreement reassessing with academic affairs. We can certainly strengthen that. We want to certainly add FTEs, we can talk about a little bit, to the recruitment team to support transfer students specifically, and even on the student success side, we're going to add an academic coach for transfer students specifically, an FTE that already exists. But then how can we really look at some of these particular current operational pieces that we can do this fall and that we plan to do this fall to support this whole initiative? So obviously the self-service preliminary transfer evaluations is a tool that was launched last fall with a combination of really academic affairs and the Office of the Registrar working with our Bound and Functional Specialists to create this portal that allows students to see their transfer credit evaluation process through this portal specifically, which helps them evaluate why, how they come to UDC and why they want to come to UDC because they can see the credit they receive. So to streamline the onboarding process, obviously we're going to create a tailored orientation for the student coming into UDC that we don't currently have for transfer. And then how can we take the one-stop registration process we currently do right now that's ongoing, that's been successful for us for the last 3 years, and take that to the community colleges where they are. We want to take the one-stop approach to the community college, particularly virtually, as we learned from COVID. That can be done, doing it successfully right now, in a virtual space through this one-stop registration process at UDC currently, this week and last week. And we can take that to the CCs around this area. Obviously, we'll take it to our own CCs specifically as well. We're going to do that certainly in the spring. And community college transfer days is obviously low-hanging fruit that we can focus on. We've done those in the past. How can we put a more comprehensive team around those going forward, what we're going to do this season, this recruiting season? Q&A session is obviously virtually as well as we've done in this past year. We continue to do those and have a focus on those for transfers. And then focus on this for transfer we've got coming up in October as well. So that is the main part of what we're going to look at as well in terms of our recruitment and enrollment strategy. So, and certainly crafting a transfer story. So, Trustee Barber, how she got here, for instance, what led her to come here, the success of her family in the past as UDC alums, what that means, just is one example of what we can craft as a narrative around the modern piece of transfer. So I'm going to stop asking any trustees have any questions here before we wrap up.
I have a question. This is Esther Barzani. And I asked you this, but I thought your answer was so good, I'd like you to answer it again for the committee. My question is, why are we focusing on transfers given the much smaller number of students transfers represent, rather than first-year students, where the greatest dropout is, and it's said, for example, if you can impact the first-year student in their first 6 weeks, you're likely to keep them the best when you lose them. Why was the decision made to focus on transfers instead?
So thank you again for the question. So it goes back to what Trustee Bell had asked a little while ago, right? We spent the last 4 years really focused on building a success model, focused really specifically on the first-time college student. And we've raised the retention rates you saw earlier from Maria's chart, 60% to 72%, right, in those 4 years overall at the university. So we feel like we have a good model in place for that group. And now it's time to pivot to other cohorts that represent the growth areas of the recruitment market, growth areas of the regional market for students as we look at how we compete with other institutions in terms of enrollment, but also in terms of how we market and brand the university. The very conversation we're having right now, one of the sweet spots for who and what we are as an institution, transfers give us that particular competitive advantage we feel right now based on what we've seen and based on what the students like Trustee Barber have already said about the UDC experience. So those are the two big reasons. Also, we know we have a support system in place right now through the FTIC model that is easily transferable to not only stop out but also transfer students. And so those are the three main reasons that we focused on for this initiative, and we think, feel very strongly about the positive outcome we're going to have through this process.
Thank you very much. Helpful. Other questions or comments before I need to direct our attention in a moment to the chat.
But specifically to Dr. Latham's point, are there observations?
Just one thing. When you have the some of this data, is it recorded? You know, the discussions about the economics, did we do a recording of any of those, a video recording of any of those sessions where you bring out the points about the economics for the students? When you actually say, you know, this is what the students come here with and how we would be reducing their indebtedness over time if they came here.
Well, that's certainly something we're going to look at from a marketing standpoint, Trustee Shelton.
I'm just saying, when you're having this, and the way I observe the media is you pick what you publish, but you publish the cute part that supports your objective, and you get your point out where it's repeated over and over again. Those are the things that we have to do, is that whenever you make that presentation about the earlier slide about how much students come in debt to us with, and you start telling that to the kids, you come here with $30,000 worth of debt, whereas if you'd have started here, you would have saved, I'll say, $15,000. That kind of conversation in a brief presentation sent out into one of those Instagrams or one of those short video conferences, and it just turns your sister and it goes on.
No,
absolutely
agree. So this process will help us frame that conversation and that type of media blitz, Trustee, for sure. We started some of that this past summer with
the and especially with the high school kids, they don't know. They don't understand the economics of a scholarship. They don't understand the game that is played now. That's different from the one when I went to school, where you were promised 4 years. Now you're promised as long as the coach likes you. And so you have to make that clear to kids.
No,
okay.
Totally agree.
Any comments? Oh, go ahead, Dr. Latham.
No, I was just saying, I totally agree with Trustee Shelton. That's something we have baked into this conversation, this process, so we'll keep reporting out on how that develops.
Thank you. We have discussed the transfer initiatives before, so it's good to have it. More robust discussion of it. Anything else?
Yeah.
I would like to not stop this conversation, but before it's over, go back for a moment to Ms. Bird and ask for some help. We've had a chat window, which I apologize, I did not see before, with a question from Dr. King Berry on behalf of faculty. Her second question, which might be the most germane to start with, is that she didn't receive any documents in advance of this meeting, and so she's asking questions in the chat. I don't know what is the practice of sending committee materials out, so I hold that out as a question. But secondly, her other question, which I do have great trouble navigating in the chat, but said she wanted to know our projected rates for the various groups compared to the final data that Ms. Bird presented, and did we reach our goals? So I invite anyone to take this on. I don't know what committee materials should be sent out broadly. Are they customarily?
Well, I'll follow with Nika and Trustee Barazone and make sure we get them out. If that was oversight on our part, we apologize for that, certainly, but we'll make sure we get it out to the faculty representative going forward.
Oh, I mean, I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't either. I'll talk to Dr. King Berry because I honestly am not real sure what the rules are for committees versus the board meeting, but I'll verify with Fanika and with general counsel, and whatever we're supposed to do, we'll do.
I also believe showing data and discussing it is one thing compared to putting new data, incomplete data, which in many ways our data sets are, out in the public. I don't know that I would think that's a good idea. People can watch the committee and see the data, but I don't know that I'd share it in advance of the meeting.
Yeah,
And so that's probably why she didn't get it, but I'll work my way through that.
Okay, thank you.
On the second question, if I can, because either William or Maria could answer it, but that would show up in the equity imperative reports to the board. But I think it's fair to say, and either Maria or William can correct me, that we are pretty much hitting or exceeding the goals we've laid out in the equity imperative, including the enrollment goal, which looked like they went down, but we actually anticipated that as well when we were putting together the plan. So I don't know if William or Maria wants to add more. And Dr. King-Berry, if you're listening, we can give you the actual numbers because we track it and we know what the goals are and whether or not we're hitting.
President Mason, exactly what my thought was is that this is all equity imperative. Now, obviously not all the details like the transfer template, but as far as the actual goals, if you look at the goals in the appendix area, you actually have the KPIs, and so you have the beginning points of where we were, and then you have the goals for every year up until 2022. And then the end of the year equity imperative reports also provide us for the specific key performance indicators for the year, which goals we met and which goals we did not meet.
Might it, in terms of these goals, be a good thing to put those together for this committee?
Yes, the committee has, Student Outcomes has an equity imperative semi-annual and annual report that comes out. And so that is provided at that time, and that's either in April or the November meeting will be when you will see the annual report.
Thank you. I'm sorry to have digressed, Dr. Latham, from what
you were. No, you're fine. We're going to go to no problem. We're going to go to the next step slide for me, please. The next slide from the convention. Yep, so opportunities for growth for us in terms of this process, what we were looking at in terms of really four key areas is a centralized credit evaluation process. How do we help support the Office of the Registrar and Southern Conference with Dr. Potter about what that looks like for the degree transfer degree evaluation process there? It's improved tremendously in the last 2.5 years, having designated people there. The question now is how we can improve support for the faculty and the evaluation process. So that's what that's talking about there. Obviously, expansion of matriculation agreements, we mentioned that before with PG, Montgomery, Nova, and then the establishment of transfer scholarship. Can we do that through the foundation? What does that look like in terms of total dollar amount and providing that support on a routine basis as an opportunity to offset the financial aid issue that we talked about in the previous slide? And then targeted marketing. How do we package this narrative, tell the story well, provide through social media and other particular platforms, and make sure that we do that on a consistent basis for the university, which is a part of, obviously, the conversation with the VP and marketing going forward. Next slide. And so the next steps for us, obviously, continuing the focus group conversations we've had the last week or so, looking at FTEs, of course, to support this over the course of the next this academic year, the transfer recruiter, transfer admissions counselor, another transfer admissions counselor supporting this particular cohort. And we've already have an FTE for an academic coach for transfer, which we're going to post pretty shortly here next week or so, that we're very excited about that's already in place. And then how we specialize this transfer orientation process through the Presence platform, which is a student development platform we purchased last year that's now coming operational. What that looks like for a specialized, customized orientation that we found from the data and the best practice research that we've done really makes the student and the transfer feel a part of the community earlier, and links them to success even earlier in that process. And then how can we create a one-stop transfer center for our students virtually? What does that mean for them from a mission standpoint, academic advising, and create this kind of one-stop shop that I mentioned before, if we do the registration, taking that to the transfer student's perspective and transfer center perspective and creating that virtually for our students. Happy to answer any other questions. That kind of concludes the deck for today and list the next steps for us as we go through this process. And we'll report out on this as we go through the next meeting. Of course, we did stop out last year. And I look forward to having some good success with this overall initiative. So happy to take any questions from the trustees at this time.
Questions, comments?
You're muted, Chairman Bell.
Sorry, I was just, this is Trustee Bell. I was just saying it looks very good. It's comprehensive and thorough. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. I've only been here on this board 5 years, and the growth of the data and the clarity of its presentation is enormous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other comments or observations? Is there any new business that is going to be ordered?
I asked Tim Hatchett to give an update on the app. I think it's important we talked about the app in this past year.
I didn't see it on the agenda, so thank you very much. So, okay, Tim, I will. My bad. Thank you.
No problem.
Tim, are you there?
Good evening. Can you see me?
No.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Dr. Virginia will give an update. Give me a walkthrough. Just an update. Wonderful. So we've launched a Student Success app this semester. We have an app that is front-facing for students to actually download. We have a QR code for them to actually scan. Once they scan the QR code, they're given the prompt to just log in to select their university. And once they select their university, they log in through, just as logging through the MyUDC, they log in with their one sign-on credential. Once they actually log in, they log in and get a screen that is detailed specifically for them as an individual student. It tells them specifically what are their holes, if they have any. It gives them a copy of their schedule, which is front-facing. It tells them where their class is located, who's the instructor of the course. They're able to contact the instructor by tapping their name to engage with the instructor if need be. They're also able to go to another section of the app, which I will show at a later time, where they're able to schedule appointments through their advising sessions with their advisors, career services, or any resources on campus where they need to actually engage with someone. We set it up so that it's a holistic approach where they can simply connect a button and create an appointment if necessary to engage with university stakeholders, from financial aid, tuition, advising, career services, tutoring and support. We've been very strategic in rolling out the app. We started with our first-year students, brand new freshmen to the university, and then we had a calendar rollout of where we're beginning to engage the upperclassmen. The sophomores are second years of the next population. We're going to start engaging as of September 1, and then we will take 30 days to engage each population so we get everyone at the institution up and a part of the application. The feedback that I have gotten so far from the students is absolutely phenomenal. They love the fact that they can find a lot of information in one place. They don't have to go to multiple places. They can even click a link that tells them how to pay their bill. It'll take them to where they can pay their bill. The feedback just today, I did a mini incentive today for students to engage them to actually register. And so I had a lot of people giving me feedback of just, one of the main questions is, why is it taking us so long to get this? And as I explained to them, I said, we've been working on this for quite a while. I said, so just understand that it's taking us a moment to get there, but we're finally there. And what I want them to do is to constantly come and see me to give me feedback so that my team and I can constantly make tweaks, updates, and changes that we see are necessary to make this app applicable for them, because it's really their pathway in utilizing the app to navigate how to be successful at university. So that's the update for the moment. Later on, I promise you, Dr. Lathan, let me have you come back, and I will walk through the app with you. The interface is very exciting. It's very interesting for the student. It's very engaging. The last feature I'm going to talk about is the study grid. Students now have the option to create what's called their own study buddy. So let's say, for example, I'm in math 151, which is a calculus course. And I go into the app and I put in the app, I need someone to study with. That alerts everybody that's in my class that, hey, Tim needs somebody to study with. And if I choose to join the study buddy group, they now can study with me, and it's a study buddy group amongst themselves. They're engaging. That's one of the features that students have said, oh, my goodness, thank you. You know, when you join a class, you don't know anyone, but now I can say to somebody blindly, I need help studying. Is there anybody who's willing to study with? So that's been one of the features that they've actually been talked about, and they're actually singing the praise that they actually love the most is the study buddy feature. But thank you, Dr. Latham. I'll answer any questions if there are any time about the application.
Hi, this is Trustee Barber. First and foremost, I love the app. I wish it was here when I first started in the spring last year. But other than that, is there a reason why it's being rolled out, like because I have, like, talked to other people. I'm a graduating senior, and they're like, we don't know what you're talking about. And because I don't have the QR code on deck, it's kind of hard for me to tell them how to get it. Is there, like, a specific reason why it's done that way?
Yes. When we decided to implement the app, we talked to probably about four universities who currently have the app. Two of those are HBCUs, and one of the recommendations they've given us just on rollout and containment and answering questions and being able to do it in a systematic fashion was to kind of stagger the way that we roll it out so that we get the full buy-in of the group we're trying to target. Now, I have done mass marketing. I have put out mass marketing to the university community and knowledge in the app. We are working on, we currently have a web page that I have not launched yet that talks about the app so that we can engage the student. We've done a professional video that markets the app to students. So we have all of those things ready to roll. We're just trying to get through the registration process first with our first-year students to get them engaged in the app, and then we're going to go full court press with the rest of the university. I promise you it's time to trust you.
Okay, because I was in that video. I'm like, dang, I thought there, because I get the email, but one of the things that I notice as students we all hate is checking our email. I don't know why. I like checking it, but that's just, so I'm like, oh, if we got an email, then I also follow you on Instagram. Because after my orientation, he told me he is the money man. So,
what did I do today? Did you follow me today? Were you there today?
No, I was at school, so I'm not on my Instagram, but at night I scroll through, and sometimes I'm like, dang, I missed it. I'm very excited because that's one thing that I came into the university, like, we need an app or something to communicate, especially I can't wait till other students get the study buddy because I have classes that I would like help with when I graduate. But thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Trustee Rudd, I just want to know, what are the other two HBCUs who have this app for currently using it?
This is LA State. And I need to go through my notes to find the other institution. I predominantly work with Mississippi State. We kind of worked kind of hand. We met with them several times before we did any work to hear some of their pitfalls of things we should avoid, some of the best practices we should utilize and putting together the platform and just some feedback from them and their leadership of how if they could do it over some things they should do differently. So we learned a lot from them and we gleaned from them how to do this in a systematic fashion that we thought would be best to engage us.
Yeah, excellent. It sounds like it's going to be a great application for our students. I'm excited about it myself.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Any additional questions?
Yeah, Tim, I thought I kept up with anything, but that's the first I'm hearing about the study buddy. That's pretty cool. Plus, I didn't know I had some competition on Instagram. I'm going to have to up my game now.
Well, typically on Instagram presentation, they know that I'm giving away something,
And I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, but just for the board's information, this team has been doing a really good job on recruitment. And so we're not ready to make it official yet, but the numbers are starting to look better and better and better in the fall. Is that a fair statement, William?
That's a fair statement, yes.
And so when they're final and official, we're hoping to give you some good news.
Excellent.
I would just notice that we're talking about the study buddies, and it's in the context of needing help. It's not only for that. A few years back, there was a study done at California Berkeley about calculus, and a professor who managed to have all of his classes passing and passing at very high grades assigned students to study groups from the get-go in the class. So however positively we can frame that, and if I can find that study, it's a little bit old now, I'll send it to you, but it's such a positive thing in so many, many ways.
Absolutely. Well, Trustee, that concludes our report for this evening.
Thank you very much. Is there anything else anyone would like to raise? Any new business?
Madam Chair, the one thing I wanted to mention that's been on my mind since the beginning, when we talk about, please forgive me for not remembering the acronym of the agency, of the entity that compiles the numbers that we're having sort of a heartburn with. I know it's four letters. But I'm wondering, I know we're not alone there, so as we talk about how we address that and what our next series of steps, I think it would be beneficial if we collaborate with other institutions, especially if we're going to do an additional series of ask for considerations or modifications going forward, sort of the strength in numbers model, so we don't seem like we're the only one asking. Now, that might be, I don't want to make assumptions, but that I wanted to add that just in case we haven't been as active, you know, moving in that particular direction.
Yes, I think we need a set of peers that we develop to look at the data. Thank you for that. I think it's a great point. Everyone's been having heartburn over iPads for years. It's just not true to student attendance patterns any longer. So.
Well, I would ask you, you may disagree with me, but it is true for the Harvards and the Columbias and the schools that have students that come in as freshmen and graduate in 4 years. And that's the model that it was.
It's true for schools with billion-dollar endowments and 98% retention rates. You're right.
There you go. You're right. And that's what we're up against.
And I was in Bluefield State. There are some schools that it would be, you know far more about this than I, but I think there must be schools that it would be helpful to talk with, compare the data.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would just add President Mason Lawrence Potter and to Chairwoman Barazzoni. The university started at least in March of 2020 before the pandemic kind of took us away. We have comparable data, and we've looked at four-year institutions. Maria, you may recall that your shop assisted us with this, but it is a baseline whereby we look at both peer and potential aspirational. And so we might dust that off and share as a preliminary document because it gives really good baseline data against other HBCUs on the four-year side. And in particular, you will see that in many ways we are outperforming in
great
areas.
Wonderful.
100% agreed. I just wanted to share a bit of good news. It's been a couple years now, but we did meet with IPEDS when Troy Stovall was here, and this was prior to having completers on the IPEDS, and so as a result of our meeting and other peer institutions, you know, completion has been added. Now, it's not used in the standpoint of ranking or things like that, but that is a piece that you do submit to IPEDS with a number of completers. So that's some bit of good news to the conversation.
Well done. Are there any further comments or questions? If not, I'll receive a motion to adjourn.
I Clobber moves, so.
Second? Who was the second?
Second. Jerome Shelton Barrington Scott, second.
Okay, thank you very much. Could we have the roll call, please? Yes. Ms. Rivers.
Yes. Dr. Barazzoni?
Yes.
Trustee Clyburn?
Aye.
Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Rudd?
Yes.
Dr. Sard?
Yes.
Madam Chair, the motion carries.
Thank you. And so long, everyone. We'll talk
again. It was a great meeting.